Welcome to the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, and www.freakradio.org. Want to thank you for tuning in. I'd also like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all the other information you need to have in order to take action. Let's start with announcements. California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, July 29th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Baldwin Creek in Wilder Ranch State Park. We'll return back to this sweet spot for removal of more Cape Ivy and various mustard species. See you out there. To get to Wilder Ranch, take Highway 1 north through Santa Cruz and continue north to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch. Watch for the sign indicating a left turn. Once you get to the State Park kiosk, let the person there know you are volunteering for the Habitat Restoration Team, and they will give you a parking pass. Meet the group at the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable, layered clothing and bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It might be a little chilly in the fog on Saturday morning, but if things get unpleasant, they will call it a day. Tools are provided. Please bring your gloves and some water to drink. If you'd like more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That 831-462-4041, or you could email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net, or you could visit their website, www.cruzcnps.org, that's CRUZCNPS.org, and that is happening this Saturday at 10 a.m. at Wilder Ranch State Park. Oil trains through Niles Canyon? Well, we're trying to make sure that oil trains and oil spills aren't part of Alameda Creek's future. The San Joaquin Regional Rail Commission is proposing to expand the existing Altamont Corridor Express passenger rail service between Stockton and San Jose. But there's a catch. The railway expansion could also dramatically increase Union Pacific freight trains through Niles and Niles Canyon, and that could mean oil tankers. The goal of the ACE Forward project is ostensibly to improve and extend passenger rail service, an appropriate and worthy transportation and conservation goal. However, track upgrades, connections, and additions proposed in the project are also aimed at increasing freight train access to and from the Port of Oakland. This could drastically increase freight traffic coming across and along Alameda Creek and through highly populated areas of Alameda County. The Alameda Creek Alliance has strong concerns about the increasing freight traffic through Niles Canyon, a narrow, constrained rail corridor that runs closely to Alameda Creek and in an area which is subject to landslides. An ACE train recently derailed in Niles Canyon and Alameda Creek. Increased freight traffic will almost certainly lead to further train derailments and accidents that could spill toxic materials and damage water quality and wildlife habitat in Alameda Creek, as well as put nearby communities at risk from toxic and flammable materials. The project proposes to essentially take over the historic Niles Canyon Railway through the canyon. The proposed railway improvements will require extensive tree cutting, vegetation removal, and excavating in Niles Canyon, and proposes miles of fencing, concrete barriers, and retaining walls that will cause blight and create industrial atmosphere throughout the scenic corridor of the canyon. A new bridge proposed over Alameda Creek in Fremont may interfere with the fish ladder that is going to be built at the Bart Weir in lower Alameda County. Many parts of the project also conflict or interfere with the proposed Niles Canyon Trail through Niles Canyon. You can read a draft environmental impact report at the Alameda Creek Alliance website, or you can find their comments on the draft EIR also at their website. Public comments on the draft environmental impact review are due by July 31st. And Central Valley Fish Trafficking Ring has been sentenced, according to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, bust. Three Fresno men faced jail time and fines after being caught poaching and unlawfully trafficking sport-caught fish, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has announced. Quay Herr, 36, Lipo Herr, 33, and Michael Vang, 31, all of Fresno, all pled guilty to charges of illegally poaching of wildlife for profit. Quay Herr was sentenced to 52 days in county jail and 4 years probation with a court-ordered lifetime fishing license revocation. Lipo Herr was sentenced to serve 9 days in county jail, 4 years of probation, and a $1,050 fine, and a court-ordered lifetime fishing license revocation. Vang was sentenced to 1 day in county jail, 6 hours community service, 4 years probation, and a $10,050 fine, with a court-ordered lifetime fishing license revocation. Over the course of a year, California Department of Fish and Wildlife officials made contact with the three men on multiple occasions as they were fishing throughout California's Central Valley. The men were frequently found in violation of various laws, including possession of gross over-limits of fish and retention of undersized striped bass. The egregious nature of their poaching activities led wildlife officers to suspect that they might be selling the fish on the black market. Wildlife officers analyzed the suspect's citation history and began a focused investigation of their activities. The investigation uncovered an abundance of evidence that the men had made thousands of dollars through the illegal sale of wild-caught striped bass and other local fish species. The investigation culminated in multiple search warrants served in December of last year, where wildlife officials located live crappie and bluegill in an aquarium, frozen striped bass, marijuana, and evidence of marijuana cultivation and sales, and methamphetamine and evidence of methamphetamine sales. The cases are a result of wildlife officers' recognition of each independent poaching offense for the egregious offenses that they were as a whole, said Assistant Chief John Baker, Central Enforcement District in Fresno. From there was good old lived-fashioned investigative work. Fresno County District Attorney's Office and Deputy District Attorneys Sabrina Astian and Adam Cook prosecuted the case. Astian displayed particular vigilance, perseverance, and tenacity in her handling of this case. These efforts, along with multitudes of other environmental and poaching prosecutions, contributed to her selection as the 2016 Wildlife Prosecutor of the Year by the California Fish and Game Commission. Anyone with information about unlawful fishing, hunting, or pollution is encouraged to contact CalTIP, 888-334-2258. That's 888-334-2258. California Department of Fish and Wildlife's confidential secret witness program that encourages the public to provide wildlife officers with factual information leading to the arrest of poachers and polluters. And your name can be anonymous. For more information, contact www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's www.wildlife.ca.gov. And a poacher accused of poisoning more than 100 elephants has been arrested after 4 years on the run in this story by Joe McCarthy on EcoWatch. Tony Mafosa, a Zimbabwean poacher, is accused of putting cyanide in watering holes and salt pans used by elephants numerous times over several years. All told, his poisoning spree is said to have killed more than 100 elephants, according to Zimbabwean authorities, who have been searching for Mafosa for 4 years. Mafosa has been on the wanted list in connection with poisoning elephants in 2013 and is also linked to the death of 8 elephants this year, a police source told the Zimbabwe Chronicle. He was arrested last week in Hwange National Park following the recent deaths of two elephants from cyanide poisoning, a common tactic used by poachers to remove ivory tusks from elephants, which can then be sold for a high price internationally. Two of the elephant tusks were found on him when he was detained. He could face more than 15 years in jail and more than $1 million in fines based on past punishments of poachers and guidelines set by the government. In recent years, some poachers have switched tactics, choosing to poison elephants rather than shooting them because it's stealthier. This arrest brings down a prominent poacher, but the problem in Zimbabwe is far wider than the single individual. Each year, dozens of elephants are killed in this park alone, which is where Cecil the Lion was killed, despite there being an active anti-poaching team on duty, according to The Independent. Lack of funding for park resources and relentlessness of the poachers and the continuing demand for ivory in the global black market keeps this number from falling. All throughout Africa, poaching undermines efforts at conservation. Poachers killed 100,000 African elephants in just 3 years, according to a 2014 study in Central Africa. The total elephant population has declined 64% in the last decade. Progress has been made in recent years, however. China, which consumes an estimated 70% of the world's ivory, has banned the sale of ivory at the start of this year. The second biggest market for ivory in the United States has outlawed the resale of ivory in the country in 2016. And the Wampi Nation responds to illegal attacks by miners in Puerto Galea. In this anonymous territorial government of the Wampi Nation Intercontinental Cry release as found in the Earth First Newswire. After more than half a year from the commitment of the national authorities to execute a third interdiction operation at the illegal mining site established in the Pescacio Stream Basin, a tributary to the Santiago and Marañón River in the Amazon of Peru, the autonomous territorial government of the Wampi Nation, in view of the breach of this commitment, agreed and decided to peacefully evict the illegal miners from that area. The operation was carried out on July 13th in coordination with the Municipal District of Santiago and included the participation of approximately 200 members of the Wampi communities near the Villa Gonzalo community. They arrived at the mining establishment in the morning and the workers were peacefully asked to leave the area. At that point, the only dredging machine there was confiscated and destroyed. In the afternoon in Puerto Galila, a group of people from the community of Yutupis, made up mostly of indigenous Awajun and who are divided because members who profit from illegal mining, attacked the Wampis who had participated in the operation against the illegal mining. Four of the Wampi men were wounded in the confrontation. At the moment, the Wampis are developing collective meetings in order to reach agreements and take new actions in the future that deal with the onslaught of illegal mining. At the same time, we are demanding the presence of the National Police of Peru in the area to avoid a recurrence of violent episodes on the part of those who work in and benefit from illegal mining. It should be mentioned that the decision of the action was also communicated in a timely way to the main relevant authorities, such as the PCM, the Ministry of the Interior, the Ministry of Defense, the Ministry of Energy and Mines, the District Attorney's Office, specializing in Bagua's environmental issues, and the PNP of Santa Maria de Nieva, and requesting of them the necessary support and guarantees. Through this press release, we reiterate our commitment to the defense, protection, and preservation of our territories, forests, and biodiversity, and we urge the authorities of the Peruvian state to intervene and provide the necessary guarantees for the lives of the indigenous peoples who watch over, protect, and fight for humanity's right to a good life. Signed in Puerto Galilei, July 14, 2017, by the Autonomous Territorial Government of the Wampis Nation. And the Sea Shepherd research vessel has returned to Canada to investigate the farmed salmon industry. biologist Alexandra Morton, actor activist Martin Sheen, environmentalist David Suzuki to kick off a campaign on July 27th. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is reteaming with renowned Canadian biologist Alexandra Morton on the Operation Virus Hunter to the nonprofit organization's Wild Salmon Defense Campaign. The campaign will launch today on July 27th with a press conference in Vancouver's False Creek Harbor at 1 p.m. on board Sea Shepherd's research vessel Martin Sheen. Morton and environmental activist and broadcaster David Suzuki and traditional First Nation leaders Willie Moon and Farron Alexander Shokochoff of the Zawada Inukwe First Nation tribe will be among the speakers at the press conference. Actor and activist Martin Sheen, the ship's namesake, will also be in attendance. Pacific Northwest salmon are threatened with open-net salmon farms that share the same migratory route as wild salmon. These farms are breeding grounds for disease and parasites, which spread to the surrounding waters and put wild salmon in danger. As with last year's inaugural Operation Virus Hunter campaign, Morton will once again travel aboard the Sheen over the course of several weeks, stopping at various salmon farms to conduct audits for disease and other factors. Morton's findings from the 2016 research mission are summarized in the end-of-campaign video found on the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's website. "I've worked to protect wild salmon from the catastrophic impact of salmon farms for 31 years," said Morton. "I am enormously grateful to the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society because they dare to take a close look at exactly what is happening in these industrial facilities. The farming of this exotic alien species, Atlantic salmon, is a lethal assault on the wild salmon populations, an insensitive assault on First Nations, and a shocking assault on the marine ecology of British Columbia's native ecosystems," added Sea Shepherd founder and CEO Captain Paul Watson. "The government's duty should be to protect the rights of First Nations, to defend the wild salmon, and not cater to a foreign-controlled, destructive salmon farming industry." And you can visit their webpage at www.seashepherd.org. That's www.seashepherd.org. And the state of Idaho has hit a new low in its war on wolves. In this story from Jamie Rappaport Clark, Defenders of Wildlife. A new proposed rule would allow hunters to lure wolves with bait and then ambush them with gunfire. "This is one of the most horrific proposals I've seen, and it could destroy whole families of wolves." This proposed rule by the Idaho Fish Game and Commission is sickening and utterly despicable. The idea of baiting mother wolves with food that they can share with their hungry pups, or tricking a young wolf who is just scavenging for food only to shoot these unsuspecting animals, is unconscionable. Idaho's wolves have been in mortal danger since Congress stripped them of federal Endangered Species Act protections in 2011. Since Idaho took over their management, nearly 2,000 wolves have been killed in the state, and it is estimated that fewer than 800 wolves remain. There has been enough bloody bloodshed. "We must act now to stop this disastrous proposal even before more wolves are killed. This newest chapter in Idaho's horrible war on wolves cannot stand. If this proposal goes forward, the next step could be permitting the use of live bait, bait in the form of animal shelter dogs, as suggested by an Idaho state senator. Live baiting should never be allowed under any circumstances." Defenders of Wildlife is the only national organization with staff on the ground in Idaho who not only help to restore wolves, but who are still actively working to watchdog actions at the State House and the Idaho State Wildlife Commission in order to defend wolves. "We need your urgent support to help us fight these Idaho unjust war on wolves. Thank you in advance for your generous support," Jamie Rappaport Clark, president of Defenders of Wildlife, and you can find them at www.defenders.org. And hunters have paid big bucks for a lion kill in this story from the African Wildlife Foundation. Xander, the son of one of Africa's most iconic lions, Cecil, has met the same fate as his father. A big game hunter shot him when he wandered outside the protected area of the Hwange National Park in Zimbabwe. Lion populations are facing mounting threats, and President Trump recently proposed budget cuts to wildlife funding that might force countries to turn to revenue from big game hunting in order to finance conservation programs. There's no time to lose. We must expand our proven strategies, not cut back. I know Xander's death is heartbreaking news for you, but your support of the African Wildlife Foundation tells me that you care about Africa's wildlife. But we can still get justice for Xander and for Cecil if we act now to protect all lions and all of Africa's endangered wildlife. Your gift will help equip rangers to combat poaching of lions, elephants, rhinos, and more, protect wildlife habitat, prevent habitat-wildlife conflict, and identify and apprehend wildlife traffickers and more. Signed, Jimiel Mandima, Director of the Program Design and Partner Relations at Africa Wildlife Foundation. And you can view their website at africanwildlife.org or awf.org. I'm not sure. Try both. And Washington Wildlife Agency will be gunning down wolves. 3-month-old pups are likely to die from this kill operation. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife on Thursday announced it will kill members of the Smackout Wolf Pack after confirmation that a calf was injured by one or more wolves on a public grazing land in Stevens County on July 18th. The kill operation will likely result in the deaths of the 3-month-old pups from this year's litter. The kill order was issued under a new wolf livestock interaction protocol adopted by the Washington Department in June. The protocol allows the smackout wolves to be killed because they were previously involved in several livestock losses or injuries 10 months ago. However, in September, non-lethal conflict deterrence measures were implemented, successfully stopping any further attacks until recently. Instead of gunning down wild wolves, state officials should be ramping up non-lethal conflict prevention measures, said Amarok Weiss, West Coast wolf organizer at the Center for Biological Diversity. Killing 3-month-old wolves is an appalling way to resolve this issue. We're extremely concerned and upset that a kill order has been issued after a 10-month period of no livestock injuries or losses due to this pack. The new protocol, plus the fact that wolf management policies are being developed through the Department of Fish and Wildlife's own Wolf Advisory Group, has been criticized by several conservation groups and the public because it provides no adequate opportunity for citizens to weigh in and undertakes no environmental review in establishing new wolf management policies. Under the protocol, wolves can be killed if there are either 3 depredation events within a 30-day rolling window of time or 4 depredation events within a 10-month rolling window of time. Protocol establishes limited requirements that a non-lethal conflict deterrence measures had been used prior to resorting to killing the wolves, and it mandates agency transparency about wolf-related activities. The Smackout Pack kill order raises additional concerns because the protocol is being applied retroactively. In addition, the agency failed to inform the public of known increased wolf activity in the area and what additional steps, if any, were taken to prevent the conflicts. This is the 4th time in 5 years that state endangered wolves have been slated for death due to the grazing of privately owned cattle on publicly owned lands, and each time this has happened, the kill operations have sparked enormous public outrage. By the end of 2016, Washington's wolf population was confirmed to be 115 wolves, but a report recently issued by the State Wildlife Agency indicates that 5 wolves have already been killed in Washington this year. 2 were struck by cars, 5 were suspicious deaths still subject to investigation, and 1 was a wolf killed in late June by a range rider monitoring cattle after catching the wolf in the act of attacking livestock. Under Washington's wolf plan, livestock owners who have had wolf-caused losses were eligible for taxpayer-funded compensation and, as is the case here, are eligible for double compensation when the livestock are grazing on areas of 100 or more acres. We should all question a policy that developed without public comment and allows the killing of wildlife on publicly owned land, even though the livestock owner can already collect double compensation for the losses, said Weiss. And you can find out more information at the Center for Biological Diversity's webpage, www.biologicaldiversity.org. And the Senate has advanced legislation gutting federal protection for wolves. In this story from Jamie Pang of the Center for Biological Diversity. The Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee voted to advance a bill that would strip protection from thousands of endangered wolves in the Great Lakes region and Wyoming. Senators Ben Cardin and Tom Carper voted with Senator John Barrasso in what was otherwise a party line vote to approve the Hunting Heritage and Environmental Legacy Preservation for Wildlife Act, or the Help Wildlife Act, which does nothing of the kind. The bill weakens the Endangered Species Act by blocking any further judicial review of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's 2011 decision to end federal protection for wolves. Legislation also prevents the Environmental Protection Agency from addressing lead pollution's impacts on fish and other wildlife due to lead-based fishing gear. This bill would be devastating for wolves and a direct blow to the Endangered Species Act, said Jamie Pang, Endangered Species Policy Specialist at the Center for Biological Diversity. Senators Cardin and Carper just joined forces with some of the most anti-environmental members of Congress to do serious injury to America's most successful conservation law. Legislation will authorize several programs and laws, including the Chesapeake Bay Initiative Act and the North America Wetlands Conservation Act. The reauthorization is largely procedural and a symbolic action that does not affect actual yearly funding levels for those efforts. Congress has fully funded the Chesapeake Bay program every year since 2005. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this year, tonight. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, and online at www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow, Friday, at 3 p.m. There are a number of radio stations around the United States who rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Please check their schedules for the day and time of those broadcasts. And if you don't find it there, ask your local community radio station to support the Earth First Update. Download and broadcast it every week. It is free to download. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.